Hey guys, do you like video games? Do you like heavy metal, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Time to rock out with your geek out. Metal Geeks! Welcome, Geekazoids. Here are your hosts, Carrie G and John Michael. Geek it out, fellas!
This is James Aver from Hellstar and Sabbath Judas Sabbath! Rock out with your geek out!
Hi, this is Chris Claremont, and I listen to Metal Geeks. You should too.
Is Spart Records?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm on Spart Records site. Buying something, and I'm $1 away from free shipping, and the shipping is like 30 euros or whatever, and I can't find anything that I want off here that I'm like, for a buck.
Can you add a pack of gum or something? That's what I always
do. No, they don't really have Svart gum. That'd be kind of neat.
That would be cool.
They had like Beast Milk gum, but they don't. They don't have it, so I'm just sort of kind of confused as to my next move is, because I don't want to pay, as I'm already paying $50 for what I'm buying, I don't really want to pay $30 or $25 in shipping if all I got to do is spend a buck to not get the shipping. So right. I should just buy something. But anyway, but how are you guys?
Doing well.
Problem's not as major as that one, but we'll figure it out.
Okay, what's the problem?
No problems at all.
Oh, good.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at it. Oh, it's all in euros, isn't it?
Yeah, everything's in euros, and they have like a Beast Milk shirt, but it's in like hipster thin fabric.
Oh, yeah,
skate like people only cotton, and I don't wear that, one, and two, they only got it in medium. So I'm like, oh, good, I can buy it for my dog or something. So I don't know. I'll find something. But
that's
anyway.
That's the same problem I have with the damn T-shirts at Target. It's all that, like, really thin hipster, like you said, material.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like they're always trying to figure out ways to keep people that aren't skinny from buying shirts. Like, before it was they never really made extra large. That's the best, is that, like, the hipster metal thing has taken over to such an effect that I go to heavy metal shows and I'm like, yeah, I need an extra large. And they're like, yeah, we don't have extra large. We don't make them. The fuck do you mean? I was like, metal is inherently a fat guy medium. Why don't you have...
Yeah, no shit.
And they're like, yeah, we don't, because, you know, there's all these fucking skinny kids who think it's funny to like black metal. And I'm like, that's great.
Yeah. I used to wear a 2X not too long ago, like a couple years ago, and it's hard as hell to go to a show and like, I need a 2X. Yeah, we don't even have that.
Yeah, no, I used to wear a 3X.
Yeah, I was at that point in myself too, man.
Yeah, I was at 200 or 340 pounds at one point in my life, which was not anything I ever want to do again. But anyway, I would go and I'd be like, do you have a 3X? And they'd look at me like, dude, does this band look like they can afford to make that kind of variety of sizes? And I'm like, no, I just figured I'd fucking ask. And so, yeah, it was a long time when I didn't, I didn't have any, like, I didn't have any pant shirts. I went and bought like a whole bunch of Dickies double extra large black shirts. And yep. Was like, yeah,
that dude, I lived off fucking like 2X and like 3X Dickies, you know, button up shirts.
Oh yeah. The 3X, the Dickies. I remember for a while, this is going back, I don't know how old you guys are, so this might be too far back for you guys, but there was this big like when the Beastie Boys had their store in New York when I used to live there, and they sell these things called Ben Davis, and they're like these weird shirts that only zip up from like the middle up, but they're work shirts. They're really weird, and they were the fucking rage. Everybody was wearing them, and I couldn't. I was like, I tried to put one on. I was like, yeah, this is not gonna happen. I was like, I really want this to happen, but it absolutely is not gonna happen. So that was, and you know, eventually after I lost all the weight, they stopped making all that stuff, which is, you know, fine. It just was really funny. I was like, I guess I'm not going to buy anything now. So
that's
anyway.
That's what sucks about losing weight, because like I had all these 2X and 3X shirts that I was like, oh, now I can't wear them. And then I got down to like a 2X and then an extra large. And now some of the shit I'm in is a large. So the extra large shirts that I was buying last year are too big for me now.
Yeah, see, I got, well, what happened to me was I was at 340 pounds and I was getting bigger. And like, I mean, I was getting to the point, I used to call it like Bond villain fat. You're like, Mr. Robinson, I'm Mr. Bond, I'm going to kill you. Like I was out of breath sitting down. Yeah, it was really bad. And I dropped down because I went a little bit crazy with this girl I was dating. I would drop down to like 175. Wow. And my doctor was like, yeah, no, you need to not be 175. You need to be 195. And I was like, okay. And then I promptly went up to 215. But so – and I was like, yeah, I should really lose weight and I just don't care. So I'm kind of like holding pattern at at extra large. But it's just funny because when I was really, really big, I had all these shirts that I had when I was like in hardcore and going to shows and stuff that were like extra larges. And I was young to be wearing an extra large, but they still had them. And then I got too big for them. And then when I lost the weight again, they were too fucking old. So yeah. I sold them on eBay and, you know, fucking kids buy that shit. I don't know, man. God bless the Benelux countries, man. Cause they'll fucking buy anything that has to do with metal. Are hardcore. I sold a kid in one, I forget exactly where, but I sold him he paid $75 for a black vinyl regular copy of the Remission Mastodon record.
Really?
Which he could have bought off of Relapse for $20 with like worldwide shipping of 10.
Wow.
And I guess a part of me should have probably told him, but I was like, ah, that's, you know, caveat emptor, you know, buyer be fucking where. So
I'll take your money. Anyway, yeah.
So he wanted to spend it and he was like, yes, but I think, and I'm like, I told him, I was like, there's no colored vinyl here. This is the shit. He's like, no, this is what I want. I'm like, okay, dude, rock and roll, man. Fucking take it. But anyway, I sold a bunch of shirts. Like I sold a long sleeve I Hate God shirt that I'd had forever. For like $50. I mean, it was an old one. It was like when they were nobody and they were printing the stuff themselves. And this before actually, they came.
I'm actually wearing the Mastodon Remission shirt right now.
Well done. As far as I'm concerned, and I get a lot of shit from this from the metal community, and it's fine. I get it. But as far as I'm concerned, Remission was the last record that I cared about Mastodon. I was like, yeah.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I was like, Leviathan was them trying too hard. And yep. Blood Mountain was them not trying hard enough. And then the new record I liked, but it's weird. This is a problem that I run into when I review records. And you guys should just jump in because I'll blather all fucking night. when I review records, like there's a lot of records that hit me really well the first time. And then they don't really stand up to repeat listens. When I first heard the new Mastodon record, I was like, cool. They're just having a good time and rocking out. But I haven't listened to it since the day I reviewed it. So I can't really consider it a favorite. So I still listen to the Remission record all the time.
Yeah, same here, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think I bought this back when Remission first came out and I still have the shirt.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really into the last album. It sounded like, I don't know, it's kind of like the new Ghost album to me. But
Ghost is a funny band to me because like people hate that band with like a fiery passion of a thousand suns. I fucking hate them. And I don't get that. To me, it's like kicking the Easter Bunny. I'm like, these guys dress up. This guy dresses up as a spooky Pope and his buddies dress up as spooky this and spooky that. And he comes out there and it's like, Elias, say it to you. And I'm like, why? How could you? Like, I understand if you don't like it, but the hate I don't get. You know?
Yeah, I don't get that either. I love their first album. I listen to that weekly, actually.
Yeah, I liked them, and they were great. They blew through Columbus, so me and a friend of mine went up there to see them, and it was great, man. And Skeleton Witch opened, and like I mean, a lot of people liked them. I don't care. And they were kind of boring. They just kind of stood there like, hey, man, thanks a lot. And then, you know, out come, you know, Ghost with real production value and they're singing and they're getting the audience involved and it's all very spooky and evil. And I was like, yeah, this is like when I was a kid and I just went and saw Alice Cooper or something. And I was like, this is a show. It's like a bunch of guys that look like they should be moving furniture, screaming in a mic at me about the power of evil. I don't care, you know, but that happens to me as I get older. Like the older I get, the less I'm impressed with a lot of it. So,
yeah. I'm right there with you, man.
You know what? I think we should probably start the show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. I didn't even know we had, and I was just sort of
because
I'll just fucking ramble.
I guess we sort of have started the show, so welcome to a brand new episode of Metal Geeks Podcast. If you haven't been able to tell, I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry G.
And I'm JM Metal Geek.
And the other voice you've been hearing is Ian Robinson, and we're going to have a good time tonight, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Thanks so much for having me on, man. It's really great of you. I really appreciate it.
No, it's I've been wanting to do this for a long time, and you're basically the epitome of what our show is about.
Absolutely.
You're into metal.
My condolences.
You're into metal, you're into comic books, you're into geeky stuff, and that's at the point we're trying to get across to everybody, that you can be a metalhead but still, you know, show your passion for what you're really geeky about too at the same time.
That was always my favorite thing, is like I would be hanging out with a bunch of, you know, hardcore, especially the metal kids. Like I'd be hanging out with a bunch of metal kids, and they'd be like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm reading Spider-Man." "What are you reading comic books for? That's geeky." I'm like, You have an inverted cross on." So I think really, you know, you have a shirt with an unreadable rec logo on it, and you worship a band that takes every single one of their pictures in a forest. I don't want to hear anything about how my shit is geekier than yours.
And they put pancake makeup on their face. Come on.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, it's like, whatever, man. They're going to wear costumes. They don't. You really think that Varg Vikernes walks into the grocery store with corpse paint? I mean, come on, guys. It's get it together.
No, but, I will tell you a funny story. When I was in Milwaukee Metal Fest maybe like 10 years ago, there was a band that was hanging out. It was called Blood Throne.
Okay.
And they had just finished their set that night, and I was friends with a couple of guys in the band. And we decided we're going to go try to find some place to eat, like 1 o'clock in the morning. Where else are you going to go when you're in Milwaukee? But we tried to find like a Denny's.
Right.
So it's me and my wife. We're dressed normally as metalheads, and they're still in their corpse paint. That was the funniest situation, going into like the, you know, cows all around the damn Denny's, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And trying to get number one seated and number two, you know, served.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be. I mean, it was when I used to go on tour with bands, and we looked relatively normal. I mean, compared to that kind of thing, we would still get weird shit. Like, I mean, it was, you know, like I don't ever really relate my life to a Bob Seger song, but that whole thing, like, you know, on the road again, you know, I'd be on the road and I'm like, these people suck. I mean, it's different now, like the internet and sort of the larger social acceptance of bizarre behaviors has made it's watered it down a lot. And, you know, I got to contend with like a lot of guys who are getting laid because they have mohawks, or I used to get beaten up for having one. But at the same time, you know, it makes life a lot easier. It also makes the music a lot less interesting. So, I don't know, it's like a give and take. Like, there's a lot of bands out there that can tour a lot easier with, you know, they have directions on their phone, and they can phone somebody, and they can, you know, double, like they can be halfway to the club and they can make sure through their cell phone or email or texting or Facebooking or tweeting or Twitter, whatever, that the show's still on. And if it's not, they can turn around. When I was on tour, like, you got there and you're like, no one told you the show was canceled? No. You know?
Yeah.
And so it made you, I don't know, Rollins always said, and I mean, I don't like to quote Rollins all that much, but he had one good point where he said that, you know, there's a lot of bands that everything comes easy to them, and I know things that they don't, and I'm okay with that. And that's kind of how I've always had to look at it. When I see bands that are, you know, they're just, they don't get it. They don't understand how tough it used to be. And when I hear them complain, I just, you know, I used to get really angry and full of self-righteous vigor. And now I just don't really think about it.
So let's get into probably, this might be your favorite topic of the night. Let's get into questions about yourself.
Oh, yeah. I love talking about me. That's for sure. So, yeah, man, ask away. Pretty much, like, I don't – I mean, all the way from, you know, my father's death all the way through to MTV or whatever, I don't really have anything that I'm hiding. So ask anything you've ever wanted to ask, which is a really, I know, egotistical thing to say. But I just meant, like, there's no real – you don't have to worry about stepping on my toes. I don't really care.
I think we'll bring up the MTV thing, but the death of father figures, I think we'll leave that one alone.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. I just meant, like, some people are like, well, I talked to you about your dad. I'm like, yeah, I got nothing to hide.
So I guess, John Michael, you had the first question.
I was doing some research on you. I've been very familiar with you on MTV, obviously. I was a fan of Headbangers Ball when you revisited it, when you revived it, sorry.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get back to how you actually got into MTV, because when I was researching you, something that kind of stuck to me was you had this cable access show that you were doing.
Yeah.
And it's very familiar with something that I'm connected to with a Metal Injection. They did the same thing, kind of. They're not like on MTV or anything, but they had a cable access show and then it took off and now they're like one of the bigger metal news sites.
Yeah, for sure. I know Metal Injection.
And you had monkey butt sex.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
No, okay. Here's the really long winded. I'll try to cut the long winded version down. long time ago, when cable access was really sort of, people were first doing things on cable access, and those like the smaller, like you were able to do your own show at like your apartment or wherever you were. There was this kid who went on to, I think he had a show on MTV for a while, and he went on to become some kind of writer. I don't know. I've never really met him. But he had a show called Squirt TV. And it was his cable access show where he just was like, hi, this is me, and I'm doing my thing. And I fucking hated him. Like, he was this, like, smarmy little downtown village kid. And I just, like, every time he was on, I wanted to put my fucking fist through his mouth. And so I said, you know what? I can do better. So I got with these two guys that I used to know, Josh and Jason Diamond, and I was like, hey, we should do a cable access show, because we were really good friends at the time. And they were like, yeah, no, we don't have time. We've got work and shit like that to do. And I said, all right, well, fine, fuck you then, I'll do it. So I had a VHS camera. I mean, like a big, like one of those ones you could kill a puma with, like the fucking big giant one. And I originally had all these sketch ideas. You know, like we were going to do this and I had this. And then when they backed out, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm just by myself. And I had 2 days to go. And this is just, honestly, got a true story. I had 2 days to go before I had to hand the tape in so that they would play it on my set time. So I think it was like 1:30 in the morning or 1 o'clock in the morning on Friday nights or whatever. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? So my father, who had recently passed away, had left me a little bit of money. So I went down to a place called Generation Records in New York City, and I don't know if it's still there. And I bought as many new records as I possibly could. And I sat in front of the camera and reviewed them and smashed them and threw them across my room and made fun of the bands and went crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I did it for about half an hour, and I gave them the tape. And then the next week, I didn't have anything to do. So I took the remaining ones, and I made fun of that. And then I made fun of movies. And I made fun of whatever I get my fucking hands on. And I didn't really think anything of it because it's cable access. You don't get any, like, you know, the Nielsens are in, Ian, you're so good. I didn't know what was going on. And one day I said, I was going down to NoFX were playing at a small club called Coney Island High in New York. And I was going to go down and try to get NoFX to talk to me. Ha ha. And I showed up and Pete from Sick of It All came over and was like, I watch your fucking show every week. You're hysterical. Holy shit. And I was like, would Sick of It All, legendary hardcore band that I've grown up with, like to be on the Monkey Butt Sex show? And they're like, yeah, sure, no problem. And we did an interview with Sick of It All and we broadcast it. And by this time, the twins were on board because we were starting to get some attention. That's how that happens.
Yeah.
And and then after Sick of It All, like all these hardcore bands like John Joseph from the Cro-Mags and like guys that I knew, you know, from like, you know, Agnostic Front and H2O and, you know, Ezak from Crown of Thorns and all these hardcore legends that I either knew because I used to go to shows or I had been enamored of because I would see them at shows, wanted to be on Monkey Butt Sex. And we started doing it and doing it and doing it. And then it just got out of control. Like labels were sending us stuff. We interviewed the Melvins. We were actually supposed to interview Sepultura the day they broke up. Like we were sitting there waiting for them to get ready to call us, to tell us where to meet them to interview them. They were in New York or they were coming to New York. And we got a phone call being like, yeah, they've broken up, Sepultura no more.
We're like, holy shit.
What? And we heard that whole story. And so anyway, we were, the show got really big and one day me and my two friends were in Los Angeles and this kid's like, oh my God, the Monkey Butt Sex guys, what's up? And we were like, Los Angeles, why do you know who we are? Are you from New York? And apparently in certain parts of the country, I know for certain Chicago and Los Angeles and I think Philadelphia and other places, people there were getting cable access time, and their friends were taping the shows in New York and sending it to them. And like, I went to this kid's birthday party that was a friend of mine in Massachusetts, and a friend of his who didn't know me, who had never met me, who didn't know that he knew me, gave him a whole bunch of episodes of Monkey Butt Sex as a birthday present. Like, it just got fucking nuts. That's and awesome. Yeah, about 3 years into it, we decided to call it a day because we had started a small production company and we had edited videos for like The Unsane and Napalm Death and H2O and a couple of other bands. And we had sort of, and sick of it all, we had shot them and edited them for them. We were trying to really focus on that. So we stopped it. And a year later, this guy named Ocean McAdams, who used to get drunk with his buddies before he was going out for the night watching my show, had become a big wig at MTV. And he called me up and was like, I think you'd be a great fit here. I think you're really funny and blah, blah. And then that sort of started down that road. But yeah, we did Monkey Butt Sex for about 3 years. And it was everything. Like, the reason I'm as comfortable in front of the camera as I am is because I did that. The reason I can interview people is because I did that. I mean, it was a huge a building block for me as far as being a professional journalist with no training at all other than doing it myself. So, yeah, and we called it Monkey Butt Sex because we were trying to find a name that if people saw it on the preview guide, like the cable listings, they would go, I have to watch that.
Yeah.
And there was a nature documentary on, and these two fucking gorillas were going at it. And this kid that we knew who lived with my friends, Josh and Jason, walked in and was like, I don't want to watch Monkey Butt Sex, and walked back out. And we were like, ding, 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 ding. And so that's how we got the name. And it's – I still get random people like emailing me being like, you should bring that back via YouTube or whatever. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's just kind of – it's the reason I'm not a fan of reunion band things. Like, it's like it was what it was because it was when it was. And doing it now would just seem kind of fake. So
has anybody put any of the any old episodes like online for people to watch?
No, because when we were on there, it wasn't really easy to tape things. Mm-hmm. You'd have to do it on like a VHS. And I and my two friends, being the fucking geniuses that we were, we'd get the tapes and like throw them out or lose them or whatever. Like, we didn't even think about it. I would give good money. I would take somebody's life if somebody could deliver all the tapes of all those shows.
Hopefully, and, people are listening now.
Yeah, that'd be great. Cool. If anybody has any laying around, fucking send them to me, or I'll pay the shipping. I haven't seen them in forever, and it seems like a lifetime ago.
What's but that's about how we got this, into it. It's like you were doing what YouTube is doing before YouTube was even thought of. Yeah. You know, people were getting their start on YouTube, and you were getting your start on cable access without even knowing it. It's pretty badass.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the risk of sounding like an egotistical bastard, my whole problem, my whole life is that I've been ahead of the curve. You know, like the shit that I was doing on MTV is the stuff that like Tosh 2.0 and like all those guys are doing now, where they're making fun of celebrity and they're poking fun and they're kind of, you know, letting everybody in on the fact that we all know it's a joke and that celebrity is really funny. And I tried to do that at MTV, and MTV were having none of it. So, you know, it's interesting to watch that stuff go on, but you know, you can't get too cross with it because, you know, at the end of the day, whatever I've done in my past has allowed me to make the most of my living writing, and that's my first love. So I can't really get too mad.
So, okay, now let's get into the whole MTV experience. Now, you mentioned how you got into it, and obviously they kind of had some conflicting issues with your approach. Now, tell us about it. Like, what was your first experience with MTV?
My first experience, first day I'm there, first fucking day, I was like, this is not going to work out. I sit down. We're in this big meeting where they had the morning meeting. Because the way that it rolled was, we came in, we had the morning meeting, we discussed what worthless piece of shit music we were going to pretend had some kind of artistic merit, and then we would go from there. And I was sitting there, and they were like, this is Ian Robinson, he's going to be our metal correspondent. And all these people were sort of being like, oh, metal, yeah, blah, and like making fun of it.
Yep.
So I started making fun of hip hop. I was like, no, I want to do hip hop too. I'm going to shoot you in the face and kill your friend. And like, so I'm doing all this like fake rapping stuff. 25 minutes later, I get called into the president's office because someone had felt that what I was saying was racist.
Wow.
I was like, no, I was making fun of their genre because they were making fun of mine. And they were like, well, we were going to send you to South by Southwest next week, but we're not because we need this to cool off. And I was like, yeah, this is not going to be my scene at all. Wow. The biggest problem with MTV, and I can get into specific things that were great and specific things that were bad, but the biggest problem with MTV was two things, timing and hypocrisy. And the timing for me was wrong because I got in there at the fucking height of rap metal and the bands, two genres of music that I hate more than anything. Like there's metal bands out now. Like I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head. Like Cradle of Filth, right? I don't like Cradle of Filth. I don't listen to Cradle of Filth. I don't care about Cradle of Filth, but I have no problem with them. You know what I mean? Like they do what they do. You know, they're a good looking bunch of guys with white makeup on. They're very gothy. Fucking congratulations, man. Rock and roll. God bless. And I could talk to them. But like Korn and Limp Bizkit and those bands, I felt were an affront to everything that is decent and about music at all. And then on the other side, I'm getting bands like The Strokes and The Hives and The Vines who are being called the second coming of rock and roll. And I wanted to stab my fucking eyes out.
Yep.
And I have a filter problem as in as it doesn't exist. So I would get on the air and make fun of these bands. And like I almost got into a fight with Julian from The Strokes. I almost got into a fight with what's his ass from Limp Bizkit, Fred Durst. Lars Ulrich wanted to bar me from the Metallica Icon thing. Like my mouth really got me into trouble.
That's fucking awesome. That is metal.
And that was my whole thing is I was like, well, I kind of got to do what I got to do to look at myself in the mirror.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I did it and they just, the MTV was not happy. The thing was I got a lot of ratings and people respected me. Even the artists, like pop artists like Britney Spears, or whatever, would ask if I would interview them, I guess, because they thought it was going to give them some street cred, which I didn't really understand because I didn't have street cred. I was the metal guy, but it was like this weird music thing that they went through. And that was cool. And I got a lot of ratings, which is why they kept me as long as they did. But eventually, they didn't want me around and they went through a lot of motions to get me out of there. And they finally did. And that's cool. That was, part of it was that. As far as being on the channel itself, the problem with MTV is it's a pyramid of cowards running a machine of hypocrisy. Now, I don't know if it's still that way because they've basically decided, we're not going to play music anymore at all. Right, we have no interest in music. We're going to run Pregnant Teen and reality show Douchebags and fucking Vinny and Snooki and all that horse shit. And they're going to do that. And that's cool. And that's fine. When I was there, they were still fronting the music thing. And I mean, like there was one time when Fred Durst was about to be brought up on charges of like attempted murder or inciting a riot or something in Australia for the Big Day Out Fest where these two girls got killed. Cause he's out there going, everybody break something. And I was like, we have to report that, right? That's news. Yeah. No, we're not going to report that.
Wow. Not.
Why? Well, like Eminem was doing the 50 Cent video and but Suge Knight showed up on the set and they all ran scared. And we were like, we're going to report that, right? Yeah, no, we're not going to report that. And so MTV would clip and tuck and then I would go on there and I would talk about a band or I'd wear a band shirt or I would want to give an opinion or I would want to interview something or whatever. And they would go, well, you can't do that. Why? Well, because it messes with the integrity of MTV News. And I was like, you don't have any integrity. That's the fucking point. And so that was the battle that went back and forth. I couldn't deal with their level of hypocrisy. And I never wanted to be famous. My favorite thing about MTV was that I got to meet cool people. I got to help out a lot of bands with exposure who nobody cared about. And I got paid really well to do nothing. Fame was never – I don't really care about being famous. I don't really care about being well-known. It doesn't really interest me. It's not a bad thing. I'm not like anti it, but at the same time, I don't care. So me and MTV had this very hard relationship from the get-go. And I had a lot of great moments. I got to meet Lemmy and have I got to take a shot with Lemmy at like 8 o'clock in the morning during an interview. Cause that's a really funny story. And then I got to meet, not just Ozzy, but also you know, all of Black Sabbath, which was amazing for me because Bill Ward was one of the reasons I started playing drums. And I made some great friends. Like, I became really good friends with Corey from Slipknot, and I became, you know, really good friends with, like, the Melvins and guys that I really worked to get on the channel that didn't forget me when I went away. And, right. You know, I Hate God. One of my closest – a really close friend of mine is Scott from Neurosis. And these people were all people who were, like, really grateful that I did what I could for their bands when I was on MTV and then didn't just go, oh, well, you're not on TV. We don't care anymore when I got off. So, right, you know, right. It's good and bad.
You know, I met Corey Taylor at a concert, and he was probably one of the most down-to-earth guys I'd ever met at his caliber. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and no, he's a super down-to-earth guy. And, you know, I mean, people don't like Slipknot, and I get it. I understand. Yeah. And that's fine. I personally think they have a great metal record in them. I just don't think that they've got it out yet. I think the closest that they came was
that last album.
Yeah, see, I didn't really hear the last record. My friend always said that if they had done a 6-song EP when they first started and then broken up, they would be legends. but personally, I think Iowa was a great record. And unfortunately it happened to come right when 9/11 hit and right. Kind of got buried under the let's listen to feel good hand-holding rock.
Yeah.
But for the extent to which they were, like, you know, I went on tour with them for 2 weeks and they're all really cool guys. I mean, they're weird, but they're really, really nice dudes. And they were on tour with System of a Down and all those guys were really, really cool. And, you know, that was some of the better times. You know, that was some of the fun stuff. You know, having to sit there interviewing Korn about their new record, I was like, this is where I'm earning my money. You know, but interviewing Lemmy for an hour and a half about Headbangers Ball, that I would have done for free. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You mentioned I Hate God. I have to bring this up. Have you tried the hot sauce, the EHG hot sauce yet in the Name of Suffering?
No, is it good?
It is actually really good. It's a ghost pepper and ancho chili pepper, so it has like that smokiness to it. It's from a local company called from Houston, where I live, Big Daddy's Hot Sauce, and Trevi owns that, who's from Venomous Maximus.
Oh, okay, cool. I wanted to try that. I also wanted to. I'm not a big drinker. I never have been. But I wanted to try their beer. Don't they have a beer, too?
I don't know if they have a beer, but I know, like, some other bands recently have, you know, put out beers.
I think I had got to have a beer, because my friend Dave Monaghan does a beer tumbler thing out of New York City. He's a beer snob. It's really funny that he and I are friends because he's always like, you know, try this, man. It was, you know, fermented in a barrel made from Noah's Ark and it was blessed by unicorns and whatever. And I drink it and go, it tastes like Budweiser. And he wants to fucking beat the shit out of me. I'm like, yeah, well, but anyway, like, I want to try their hot sauce.
After we're done later, you know, I'll get your home address and I'll send you a bottle. I'll go pick one up for you.
Now, dude, I would love that. I'll totally pay you back. That would be awesome.
Yeah, totally, man. There's also the same company that also have a High on Fire hot sauce, which is pretty good. We had a hot sauce festival here that I covered for work. I work for a really local small TV station, and we covered hot sauce festival. Yeah, I'm a videographer there. And
nice.
Trevi from Venomous Maximus had started this band at the show, and it was him, and it had James Rivera from Hellstar singing, and it had Bumblefoot from Guns N' Roses was there the whole weekend, and it was like this jam band, and I filmed that whole thing. I haven't released footage yet.
That sounds great.
But yeah, there's the High on Fire sauce, there's the Flaming Lips. Let's see what else is there. That's pretty much it. But you know, it's like, he gets the guys from the bands to actually design the logos and stuff too.
No, that's, I mean, yeah, I mean, first of all, anything having to do with I Hate God, I want to have something. That's one of the really funny things about my life is that, you know, I don't really care about most of the big bands that are out there, but you know, I'm friends with, like, you know, I Hate God just played in Columbus and I went and I got to see Mike. I hadn't seen Mike and Jimmy in a long time. And I'm friends with those guys. Like, yeah, man, what's going on? But at the same time, I'm still totally enamored by the fact that this is I Hate God. Same thing like Scott from Neurosis. Like, me and Scott never talk about music ever. Scott's a big wrestling fan and so am I. So we always talk wrestling. So because we don't really talk music and stuff, I forget that Neurosis, like, I worship them. And that's Scott from Neurosis, and I forget that. And then yeah. Sometimes it hits me, and I go, ha, 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 and I don't really know what to say, and I get weird for a while. Yep. And then I'm okay again. But, you know, it's just – it's very interesting because the bands that mean something to me, the bands that I respect, that I got to meet, that I got to create some kind of relationship with, you know, I'm still friends with. Like, you know, I knew Dez from High on Fire when he used to play drums for a band called Mind War. And so it's really awesome to see Dez, you know, become something huge. You know, I met Nate. You know, I talked a lot about Converge on MTV, and I met Nate. That me and Nate have stayed really close. And you know, and I lived in Boston for 10 years. And when one of the first bands when I was on Monkey Butt Sex from Boston that I had when they came down was this band Cast Iron Hike, and Chris Popecki, who's in Doom Riders, was in Cast Iron Hike, and so I've known him for a really long time. So it's really great to see all these people sort of realizing their dream and doing what they want to do. But what's even more impressive is that none of them have forgot, you know, their old buddy Ian that's not on TV anymore. Like, we're all still very close and we talk, and that says a lot about them as people, I think.
Now, Don Michael, I'm sure you would agree with me. That's the great thing about doing the Metal Geeks podcast. With MSR Cast, I do band interviews, and it feels more of that, you know, the typical PR interviewing the band. But when we have people that come on this show, they open up to us. They become friends. Like, we just interviewed Matt Harvey from Exhumed, and we talked about comic books for like half an hour. And we did a whole episode with Larry Roberts from November's Doom, and he's like our third, you know, missing co-host now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
amazing to me. It's been amazing to me how many people are like the walls of, like, I don't know you, you don't know me, tumble down through comic books even more so than they do music. Like,
100% agree. Yeah.
It's really weird. Like, you know, and in some parts with some people, and not everybody, and I'm not expecting it to be that way, but wrestling is also like that. Like, you know, when I first met Scott, I was like, you're in Neurosis. He's like, yeah. I was like, and then I mentioned something off the top of my head about I couldn't go do something because there was some wrestling thing happening. He was like, oh, wrestling. Do you, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, there was none of that anymore. It was just like, you know, we had known each other forever because we sort of connected on that. And I connect with a lot of people on comic books in a way that – I don't know. It's weird. It's like talking about music with people who are musicians. There's like a weird sort of divide there.
I have a couple of things I have to say here, man.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, the beer is actually Three Floyds Brewing Company in the name of Suffering for I Hate God.
Okay.
Secondly, I am with you on the professional wrestling aspect. I am I was actually talking about it this past weekend with my fiance. One of my childhood dreams were crushed when I was, I guess, about 15, when I realized I wasn't getting any taller, because I literally had a dream of becoming a professional wrestler.
Wow. It's funny. My dream is, has always been and continues to always to be, if one day it would ever happen, is to write for professional wrestling. I never wanted to be a wrestler because I just don't want to get beaten up. But I've always wanted to – I still want to write, especially as fucking fucked uply horrible as it is now, because I watch a lot of the independent stuff to actually get in at my entertainment. Like, I'm a big fan of Ring of Honor. I'm a big fan of Evolve, and my friend Gabe does this thing. It's Evolve and Dragon's Gate, and I'm a big fan of that. And I have like a weird obsession with El Generico and everything. But you know, I grew up with NWA and World Class Championship Wrestling and AWA and the WWF. So I still watch the WWE, and my fiance is hysterical because she likes to watch it with me, but she just thinks it's so funny because I get so fucking aggravated. And she's like, you know, it's fake. I'm like, that's not the point. It's not that I really
fucking storyline.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't really think this guy is going to get his head crushed by a chair by Randy Orton. It's just a bad story arc. It's horribly written. And so, yeah, it's funny how, it's, you know, some of that stuff you just, it stays with you. And people, even more than comic books, people will give me the fucking double glance with, you watch wrestling? I'm like, yeah, I watch
wrestling. I get that too, man. I frequent a website. I guess it's a dirt sheet. It will be WrestleZone.com every day.
Mine is PW Professional Wrestling Insider, PWI.com.
Oh yeah, I've gone there a couple times. I don't know.
I've only ever checked that one out. I've never checked out another one. I should probably look around more so than I do.
Well, they have this chair shot reality thing where they have guests come on. Recently, they had the guy. His name was Doc. He used to be in the Aces and Eights in TNA.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's funny. Okay. Actually, TNA is doing their thing in Cincinnati tomorrow. And me and my fiance and a whole bunch of people are going. She's a Cincinnati roller girl, and the 90% of her team, who are a lot of them aren't even into wrestling, they're just going because I think it'll be fun. And I haven't followed really TNA that much, but I'm excited to go just because it'll be fucking wrestling.
It's right down about an hour from me, actually, where they film Impact. I live in Tampa, so it's this is the mecca of professional wrestling.
Yeah, for sure. There used to be, I don't know if there still is, but there used to be a couple of really big wrestling schools down there.
Yeah, there's I know that Dave Bautista was doing stuff, and then he went to MMA, and now he's into acting. But he lives right around here. He's actually a coworker of mine went to school with his daughter, and yeah, and he goes to the same gym. It's a lifestyle gym or something. But I actually work. I don't know. How old are you? I'm 34.
Me, I'm 42.
42. Okay, so you remember Superstars of Wrestling on WWF? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember – I can't call on this because he gets very offended, but do you remember a guy who – he was an enhancement fighter, a wrestler, Barry Horowitz?
Yeah, sure.
He's actually a friend of mine, and I work with him.
Why does he get offended if you call him that?
Well, he gets offended when you use the J word.
Oh.
I've lost. I haven't said anything in a few minutes. What's the J word?
The J word is called jobber.
I was thinking of a different J word.
Yeah.
No, it's not Jesus or anything like that. No,
he is Jewish.
A jobber is a guy that they specifically hire to come in and wrestle a guy and lose. If you ever are watching professional wrestling, not you ever would, but if they ever, you do, and it's oh my God, it's, I don't know, CM Punk against Bill from Nova Scotia. You know what I mean? That's a jobber.
It's like Daredevil's father in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's perfect. That's a perfect thing. And it's really funny because, nowadays in WWE, what they've started doing is they've started taking some of their actual more well-known wrestlers and that are sort of either moving on or getting ready to retire or at a certain position in their popularity and using them as jobbers. Chris Jericho and CM Punk a lot are stuck with guys who suck to try to boost their ability in the ring, which is really kind of funny.
Yeah. That's one of the things about Barry is he's an old school guy. He actually wrestled in NWA. He actually Florida champion, etc. Everybody who watching wrestling from our childhood remember him as the guy patted himself on the back and always lost. But he he was telling me some road stories. I don't know if you've ever really been able to talk to any wrestlers about some of the stories that happened on the road. But
I've met a bunch of wrestlers, but it's either been at signings or they used to come to MTV. This is actually funny. The wrestlers like The Rock or Stone Cold or Eddie Guerrero when he was alive, Kane, The Undertaker, a bunch of them came to MTV every now and then to do something if WrestleMania was coming up or whatever.
Oh, right,
And they would all come in and they'd be like, we want to meet the guy that's always wearing wrestling shirts on air. And because I would always be wearing wrestling shirts on TV. Because I didn't have a wardrobe person. Because this is a funny story, not to completely get sidetracked, but just
remind. No, it's okay.
When I first got there, they were like, you're going to have a wardrobe person. I was like, yeah, I don't really want a wardrobe person. It sounds lame. And they're like, no, you're going to love it. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to love it. And I'm like, no, you are, you are. And I was like, okay. What do you do? And they're like, well, we'll buy you clothes. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I want to, this is what I wear. Like, I like band t-shirts, and I can go show you these websites. And they're like, no, we can't really buy you that stuff, 'cause you can't really wear, band shirts on air. And I'm like, okay, what are you gonna buy me? Like, well, you know, we're just, you know, you're the rock guy, so we'll take care of it. I'm like, all right. So a week goes by, and I get a phone call in my office, and they're like, hey, you want to come down and check out what we got? I get down there, and I'm not kidding, they had bought 36 different button-up black bowling shirts with some kind of insignia that meant rock, like an 8-ball, a flame. Like, there was more flaming shit than I'd ever seen on clothing. Like, it was flaming guitars, flaming cars, flaming dice, flaming chicks, flaming drumsticks. And I was like, yeah, this is all lame, and I'm not wearing any of it. So I used to always wear whatever I would wake up and get dressed and come to work and go do the news and go home. Like, I never really changed. The rest of everybody changed clothes. Wow. And then change back in their street clothes. And I was like, I have no interest in doing that. So I was always wearing wrestling shirts. So the wrestlers would come in and like ask to meet me. And that's where I got a bunch of the pictures that I have, of them. But I never really sat down. I've always wanted to sit down and interview for like 2 hours Ric Flair, who's my absolute favorite wrestler of all time, and just listen to his stories about wrestling.
Right. Well, I mean, it's pretty cool because like he's actually traveled with like all the guys from our childhood up to most of the guys, except for probably around CM Punk's age and younger. He has all kinds of stories. It's awesome. Like, he was telling me that Al Snow basically is a huge video gamer. And yeah, so like when they were traveling, he would always be going to the arcades. He would always play his portable handheld games.
That's funny.
Yeah. Then he was telling me about how I guess his name's I can't remember his name now, but his real name is Glenn Jacobs. That's it. He's Kane.
Yeah, Kane. Like, Kane's great. Yeah, he was first, and then he was Kane.
Yeah, Dr. Isaac Yankum. That was
it was like Dr. Toothum. Something. It was like something really like, I'm gonna yank him or something stupid.
Yeah.
I remember when Kane, because Kane was around for so long, and they had this big thing like, Kane's going to take off his mask. And they had kept the secret really well. And then Kane takes off his mask, and I was like, that's the dentist.
Yeah.
What? I was like, that's the dentist.
I had the dentist.
Like, yeah, like, that's the fucking dentist. Kane was the dentist. What kind of bullshit is that? And we were all so angry. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, so you were telling me about Kane.
Oh, yeah, he was saying that just recently, you know, like how they're doing the whole corporate Kane thing. Like, he's actually really well-read, and he's very into politics, and he's saying that...
Isn't he going to try to run for council when he retires from wrestling?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Are you kidding me? If Kane was going to be... If they were like, Kane's going to be your fucking congressman, I'd be like, I don't care whether he's a Democrat or Republican, I'm voting for him.
Right.
Because as soon as... Whenever they're like... The senator from so and so has the floor. As soon as he gets up to talk, it's got to go. Like, it's got to have his theme music as he walks down the. That's what I'm picturing. Like, he's got his mask on and a suit.
There was one last thing I'll talk about, and then I'll move on from it. He was actually telling me about. Do you remember when Paul Bearer was buried alive by the Undertaker on a pay-per-view?
Yeah, yeah.
He actually was Paul Bearer's body double, and they had booked him to go under the ring and hang out under the ring for like the entire show, and he's extremely claustrophobic.
Oh God, that's
yeah. And he was like, I don't know if you've ever seen underneath of the ring or not, but it's literally like you can get killed under there. They have steel cables that stretch across, and if something pops, you know, that's going right through you. It's going to kill you.
Ouch.
Yeah, and he was telling me about the story, and then he was like, so I told him, fuck you, I'm not doing it.
Good, I wouldn't do it either.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, Ian, you want to wait underneath the ring for 5 hours where you might get killed? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Really. Certainly not for Vince McMahon, so
now,
yeah.
Now look at this segue. You are a writer for Crave Online. Why don't you convince them to start up a wrestling podcast? And
here's a funny story. this is the Crave Online is owned by a large conglomerate of it's like a multi, like when they took me to the New York Comic Con this past month, they had me and the rest of the people that were shooting and doing stuff for the Comic Con. They had to stay at the corporate apartments. Like, it's no fucking joke. And they own about 25 or 30 websites. Mm-hmm. Crave being their, I think as of right now, their most popular one. But they're, and then one of them they own is some wrestling site. I don't remember what it is. So they feel like if I wrote about wrestling or had a wrestling podcast, it'd be a conflict of interest for their other site. Interesting. So I'm trying to convince him to let me do something on the other site, because I would love nothing more. Because Scott, me and Scott from Neurosis talk all the time about doing a podcast about wrestling. And then like our buddy Eugene, who was an Oxbow, is a big MMA guy. So we could bring him on to talk about MMA. And then my friend Vinny, who's a rapper from Philadelphia, is like a boxing encyclopedia. And so we could have him on to talk about boxing. It could be really big and garner a lot of listeners, but I just got to find a place for it.
That's always the hard part too. Yeah, definitely, man.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Crave Online. How did you get involved with them, and what kind of stuff are you actually doing for them?
Well, it was weird. I was I'd given up sort of show business. I was still writing for myself. I was putting out sort of underground self-published comic books with my friend Brian Smith, who's an artist out of Boston. I was living in Boston. I was working for the state, taking care of troubled teens. Like, it was just kind of very sort of normal. And around 2004 or 2005, I got this email out of fucking nowhere from this guy named Ahmad Childress, who no longer works at Crave. He went on to – I think he's doing something with a YouTube channel, like the actual TV channel they're trying to launch.
Mm-hmm.
But Ahmad had been a fan of mine on MTV, and Crave was nothing. Like, they had no real – direction. They didn't really have a look. They didn't have anything. And they needed – he was like, you know, I had only been out of MTV for a little – like, I think under a year or just at a year when he called. And he was like, look, you know, we need somebody to – you know, like a name. Like, we can say, hey, we got this guy. You know, will you be that guy? And I was like, sure. And they're like, well, we can't pay you a lot to start with, as in like almost nothing. And I was like, well, that's cool. I got a good job and I don't care. And I'm like, whatever. So I just started writing – anything for them. Like, I wrote all kind of shit. And then as they got bigger and sort of more commercially viable, I mainly do stuff for comic books with my editor and podcast co-host Andy Huntsnacker. And then I do music stuff. My editor there is this guy named Johnny Firecloud, and so he's the editor. And I do music stuff. And Johnny's great. And the site's really good about letting me balance out between doing stuff that people are going to, you know, care about and stuff that only I care about that no one even listens to. Like, you know, I just did a big thing on I did the Jimmy Eat World and the new Nine Inch Nails record. But at the same time, I did the Corrections House record, which is like this weird noise art thing that Scott from Neurosis and Mike from I Hate God have just put out. So they're really cool about me balancing that. So I do, and I just sort of started going into television and doing stuff for TV. More for them, I do lists. Like, lists are fucking gold on the internet. Like, you can do a list.
Yeah.
Even if nobody cares what it's about, they'll fucking read it.
I just read your Movember, your 15 best examples of facial hair and rock today.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun, because everyone was like, it's Movember. And well, it started off because I was like, well, I'm going to do the 15 or the 10 or 15 best examples of facial hair in comic books. And and then I was like, well, wait, I should do it in rock too. And there hadn't really been like a really great list, because a lot of people, when they do the – what I try to do differently is, a lot of people, when they do lists, they just do the list. They do it in order, and they just say, this is the person. I try to write something for each entry. Nothing too long, nothing too drawn out, because no one wants to read that. But just something that's a little bit more engaging than just like, here, look at this. And so doing the facial hair one was a lot of fun, because I get to poke fun at, you know, at rock and roll people, which is always a good time. So anyway, I do music. My main thing is music and comic books. I occasionally do television, sometimes film. I pretty much go all over the site wherever anybody will whatever anybody wants me to do. I also do, you know, interviews. I'm not a big fan of interviews unless I'm in front of the person, because that's really how you engage in a conversation. Skype interviews make it somewhat easier. But, you know, most of the time bands are like, well, how about we do an email interview? And you get it back and it's like each answer is four sentences. I'm like, yeah, I can't do anything with that. So
I fucking hate that.
I think any kind of email correspondence sometimes, you know, you never really can really tell what the other person is feeling. You don't get the emotion. So sometimes it comes off wrong.
Yeah. And also, like, whenever I have an interview, even if I don't care about the band or the person, if I'm talking to them face to face, and like I said, Skype makes it way easier than phones, because phones are uncomfortable. With Skype, it's more like a conversation because you're just kind of talking to nothing. But you know, you might be talking about one thing and you're thinking the conversation is going to go one way, and then they'll mention something and you're like, I didn't know that, and then they'll expand on that, and what'll happen is you'll start to pull nuggets of new information, things that are really interesting that people haven't heard before, out of the interview. And the way I interview, at least when I do face-to-face, if I have a time limit, it's very different. I can direct the conversation. But if I have an unlimited time to just talk to this person, I'll talk to them for as long as they can and then go back and pull out what I think is interesting. And that's really where you get, you know, you get great stuff and you get great conversation. And that doesn't happen with the email. You know, you get, even if you get somebody who's really good at email interviews, like Buzzo from the Melvins, it's still just two paragraphs of him just reciting something, you know? So
it's more like an essay question answer, but it's,
yeah,
it doesn't feel like
I feel like you should be grading it, not like
exactly
on air. So
so let's talk about the Book Report podcast a little bit. How did that get started?
It's again, the comic book editor when I first started at Crave was a guy named Joey Esposito. Joey now, I think, is the comic book editor for IGN.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of IGN because they love everything, and that just kind of bores me. But it's like the MTV of the comic book industry.
Can't disagree with that.
Yeah, Joey's a great guy and a great writer. I just, like, every time I read anything like this, like, I'll read something and go, this is fucking garbage. And without fail, I'll go to IGN and be like, who's just so imaginative and just so lushly drawn? I'm like, all right, you guys are dead. This is bullshit. This is horse shit.
I read your review on The Last Nova, and I agree with you. He does deserve a better artist.
Yeah, he deserves a way better artist. I was like, the art needs to be – it's too cartoony. The whole, like, manga American computer animation thing or computer graphic thing just bothers me.
Yeah.
And the worst is I just wrote a review for The Amazing X-Men number 1. There's a guy out there – I don't know how this guy continues to get work. He either had – he has pictures of Joe Quesada and Dan Didio either with a live boy or a dead girl, because the only way this guy continues to get fucking jobs is blackmail. His name is Jason Aaron, and he could be one of the worst comic book writers in the history of the medium. He had a run on something called Scalped, which was pretty good, but everything – he had one of the worst runs on the Hulk since the inception of the character. He had a run on Wolverine that was horrifically drawn out and completely boring. He just shit-bombed a great idea in his run with Thor, and now they've got him dealing with the return of Kurt Wagner from the X-Men, and it's horrible. And the worst part is Ed McGuinness, who's a pretty reliable artist, is trying to draw – to this, like, wacky comedy way that Aaron's writing the book, and it looks terrible. Wow. And I'm like, ah.
I read this issue tonight, right before we recorded, and I couldn't agree with you more. It's the art style. It looks like a really bad cartoon.
Yeah, and I think part of it, just because McGuinness has been such a – I mean, McGuinness has always been over the top. Like, his bodies have always been extremely super crazy muscular and whatever. But he's always been an incredibly reliable artist. I liked his work on the early stuff in Nova. I loved Superman, Batman. Big fan of that. And so I think what happened was he read Jason Aaron's script, and Jason Aaron's script reads – like a wacky comedy TV show. Mm-hmm.
It does.
And he was trying to draw to that, and it was way too, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's like, yeah, okay.
Well,
you know?
Okay. What was up with the Wolverine and Storm sex jokes in the comic?
Well, Wolverine and Storm, I guess in Jason Aaron's other abortion of a comic book, Wolverine and the X-Men, where Wolverine's taken over teaching the kids.
Right, yeah.
Wolverine and Storm have become kind of an item because Storm and Black Panther are on the outs.
Yeah.
They have been for a while. And that's fine. That makes total sense. But, like, you know, Storm and – like, Wolverine doesn't do – kooky one-liners, and like neither does Storm. So to have Storm and Wolverine trading, you know, quips, funny parts, okay, about a quickie in the shower, it's like, no.
Yeah, here's the line I'm talking about. You said a quickie in the shower, and Wolverine basically retorts and says, "I'll skip the foreplay," and Storm says, "No, you most certainly will not." What the hell is that?
Yeah, I mean, basically Jason Aaron has the same problem that a lot of other comic book artists or comic book writers have. Brian Michael Bendis has this problem. Mark Millar can have this problem. They decide that they're so preoccupied with writing their story, with putting their stamp on the series, that they forget or ignore the history and of what's come before, the continuity of who the character is, and they just all of a sudden write them their way, and you have this you have Wolverine doing things that Wolverine doesn't do. Matt Fraction's another, though Matt Fraction's Hawkeye is one of those brilliant things being put out right now, but Matt Fraction's Fear itself, and they did this in Civil War, and it's like, we're going to write the character either how we think they should be, which is not who they are, or we're going to bend what they do to tell our story. And it just doesn't work. Like, Hank McCoy doesn't bust down walls and go looking for things because they stole his coffee maker. And you can hear Jason Aaron, hear it in his room going, "That's so funny. People are going to laugh out loud with the coffee maker. That's so funny." And you're like, that's not why you write comic books, you know? And Aaron is fucking Aaron could not finish a run if he put a fucking gun to his head. Like, the guy cannot finish a run unless he draws it out and beats it to death and leaves it as nothing but dust. Like, he cannot do a simple story arc. Like, he had a great idea with Thor and Gore the God Killer, but he stretched it out.
He did
way too long.
Okay, so we know who you hate. Which comic writers do you love?
That's funny. Most people just want me to go off on and on and on about who I hate. Let me think. Who do I really love?
Love, hate, all the same things.
Scott Snyder.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, writer for Batman, the writer for American Vampire, the writer for Superman Unchained, the writer for a couple for The Wake.
Death? No, he didn't do Death. He did Death of the Family.
Yeah, the Joker of Batman. He wrote Detective for a while before they switched over to the New 52. Scott Snyder is one of my absolute favorites. I think his storytelling ability is on a level that will push him into the annals of comic books. Like, in 20 years, when the new guys are up there going, like, and people are like, "You're amazing. Who inspired you?" People are going to say, "Hey, Scott Snyder." And it's really funny because I met Scott Snyder when he was nobody, when American Vampire was kind of getting popular and he was just about to start Detective and nobody knew who he was. And I wrote a really good review of one of his records, of one of his issues. And then I wrote a scathing review of the other one. I was like, "What the fuck, dude? Why would you write this?" And Scott contacted me and was like, "I really appreciate your honesty. I really appreciate the fact that you don't just say that, 'Hey, it's great. Hey, it's great.'" And he and I became buddies. So it's like real, like good friends. And it's amazing. It's great for me knowing how talented he is to watch him become so popular. So there's Scott Snyder. There's Ed Brubaker, who is about as good as it fucking gets. Mm-hmm. Like, that guy can write. That guy could write a fucking phone book, and I would buy it and put it in a board in a bag and keep it. Like, that guy is absolutely without fail one of the greatest comic book writers there will ever be. Greg Pak.
He just wrote Velvet.
Yeah, Velvet was phenomenal. Did you read it?
Yes. I did read that too. It was really good.
Yeah, I was unbelievably impressed with it. Greg Pak is another one. Dan Slott will go down in history as writing one of the most important, if not the most important, runs on Spider-Man in the history of the character. I mean, yeah. Slott's is just phenomenal. Hickman, what Hickman's doing right now, Jonathan Hickman's doing right now with Avengers and New Avengers and Infinity is – it's staggering. Like, it makes me want to cut my hands off and never write another word. Like,
I loved his Fantastic Four stuff, man.
Yeah, and I'm not a big Fantastic Four guy.
Exactly.
But my friend, my co-host Andy is a huge Fantastic Four guy, and he was like visibly depressed when Hickman left the series, and I didn't know why because I hadn't read it, not because I had beef, I just hadn't read it. And then I started reading what he had done, what he was doing with Avengers and Infinity, and I was like, holy motherfuck, this guy. This guy is the joint. I'm trying to think who else do I mean, you know, there's the old school guys that there's old school guys I love, like, you know, Alan Moore and Walt Simonson and, you know, those guys, Neil Adams, Frank Miller before he lost his fucking mind. But as far as the Frank Miller after Sin City, Frank Miller just went. And decided I'm going to put out nothing but shit. And he put out All-Star Batman, which is crap. And then he made the god-awful Spirit movie. And he just was like, I'm Frank Miller. Everything I do is great. It's like, not really. But
speaking of Walt Simonson, I just picked up the Walt Simonson Mike Mignola book they did in the early 90s. The trade of it. And I have never read that before. And I'm excited to dive into it.
Walt Simonson is one of my top guys, like, you know, I mean, like, above all, through thick and thin, up and down, across the board without fail, everything, like, Jack Kirby is the sun and everyone else is a shadow. That's just the way that is. And then outside of him, there's Will Eisner, who I worship. I think he's like the stuff he did with the Spirit in a time when sequential storytelling art was not smiled upon. I think Peter David's run on the Hulk is probably the definitive run on the character. Denny O'Neill, who did him and Neil Adams basically saved Batman. You know, I'm trying to think. Jim Shooter, who did a lot of great stuff with Legion of Superheroes. Bill Sienkiewicz, I love his work.
Well, I met him a couple of years ago. He's such a nice guy, too.
Yeah, he's a fucking mess, though. That guy is you just see him. And you're, like, when I met him, he was at the Boston Comic Book Convention. He was like an hour and a half late. When he showed up, you're like, so, how's the drinking going?
you can tell.
Yeah, he definitely enjoys the drinking. Chris Claremont, who I still think has written the definitive Wolverine. No one has come close to capturing what the true spirit of that character is. And I have a Wolverine tattoo, so he's one of my favorites. No one has ever come close to capturing the real character the way he did in the 4-issue limited series that he did, that Frank Miller did.
He was at the big festival or comic convention down here now called Comic Palooza. And Chris Claremont was here last year, and he had a huge line, not because he was super, super popular, but he would take the time and talk to each one of his fans and take pictures and just hang out with them.
Yeah, he took a picture. Chris Claremont took a picture with me. I got him to – when I went to New York Comic Con, I got him to sign my Wolverine number one, and we talked for a really, really long time. Another guy, another new guy who is definitely going to be an important comic book writer in the future is a guy named Sean Murphy. He's going to be an important writer and an important artist. He did this run last year. It's probably my favorite miniseries of last year. It was called Punk Rock Jesus, and it was fucking brilliant.
You know, I was going to read that just from your reviews on it before.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. The funny thing is when I got it, I was like, yeah, punk rock thing. Great. Cause you know, it's like everybody's like punk rock aerobics and punk rock bagels and punk rock donuts and everything is punk rock. And I was like, fuck this. And I was reading it and I was like, holy shit, it works on. And his art is fantastic. And he couldn't be a sweeter guy. He, I think, you know, that guy is going to be important. As far as artists go, I think Ryan Stegman is a big deal. I still think Ivan Rice is brilliant. Rafael Albuquerque, that guy can do no wrong. Huberto Ramos.
Oh, yes.
Frank Quitely. I'm trying to think who else. Jim Frank Lee. Capullo? Craig Capullo, fucking that guy. Here's a fucking funny story. So I go to New York Comic Con and Scott Snyder is like, you know, dude, let's go hang out. Let's go to this DC karaoke thing. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I go to this big room where the DC comic book creators are singing karaoke. And the funniest thing is when I never saw Greg Capullo before in my life. So I thought he was going to be like, the way he draws is so delicate. It's so like sketched. It's so detailed and perfect. I thought he was going to be this like, you know, Joy Division t-shirt wearing sort of sad, mopey looking hipster kid.
No.
I show up and he's like this fucking working out, like, you know, guy's like, hey, what's going on, dude? With his big, giant Black Label Society hat on.
Yeah.
That apparently he never takes off. And I was like, yeah, okay, no. I would have made a list of 1,000 people and I would have never picked that guy out to be Greg Capullo.
He got his one of his starts was doing Ice to Earth's album covers.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he's a metalhead at heart. So
no, he's not. Yeah, me and him spent an hour talking about the rivalry when I was a kid between those who liked Judas Priest versus those who liked Iron Maiden. Like there was this weird those two bands for some reason when I was a kid. There was like you know the Maiden kids liked Priest, the Priest kids liked Maiden, but there was this definite divide of which one was better. I landed on the Maiden side.
I love
Judas Priest. Rob Halford is the man. I'd never front on that band ever. But if someone said pick a run of records that you're going to be stranded on an island with, it's going to be Maiden all the fucking way. But I had friends who were like, yeah, man, I like Maiden, but Priest is this, and they would yell at me. And I'd go, man, no, but it's about Maiden over here. So he and I talked about that, and that was a really interesting and weird conversation to have for the guy who draws Batman. I was like, yeah, okay.
His version of the Joker is probably the best I have ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his version of the Joker is right up there with some of the best ever. I'm trying to think who the best version of the Joker I've ever seen is. I don't know. That's hard. I think Tim Sale's Joker in the Long Halloween and Dark Victory was really, really stunning. There's funny, there's an artist named Darwin Cook who did a Joker for one panel in his JLA New Frontier book. That's great. Mike Mignola's Joker is amazing. He did Batman and Hellboy.
Yes.
Team up. His Joker was phenomenal.
That's Carrie's favorite guy.
Yeah, I'm a huge Mignola fan, and I'm excited because he's going to be at Comicpalooza this next year.
Cool. Yeah, I met him. I did I used to do this show, this internet show in Boston called Dude That's Awesome. It was basically a comic book kind of show.
Dude, that is awesome.
Yeah, we got to interview Mike Mignola, and I've always heard that he's a dick, but he was super nice to me.
Huh.
Nick Dragotta, another guy. He did a lot of the Fantastic Four work with Hickman, so you should be super familiar with him. I'm trying to think. Yeah, that's – I mean, you know, those are the guys that I love. Those are the guys that – there's a lot of up-and-comers whose stuff I like. Kyle Higgins, who writes Nightwing. James Tynion, who writes Talon. Even though he's
I love Talon. Talon's not one of those comics that a lot of people have been paying attention to. I love the whole
thing. I only jumped into it for two reasons. One, it had to do off the Court of Owls, which I loved. And two, James is Scott's student. And so Scott was like, you should really read his stuff, man. It's really good. And I was like, all right, fine. And I read it. I like Justin Jordan. He's doing some Green Lantern stuff that I really like. He's kind of a douche. Like he's got this sort of like – he's fat and kind of, you know, scraggly. And he's kind of the embodiment of the comic book guy from The Simpsons. Mm. But he's a really great writer. Those are the guys that I get excited about as far as the new dudes. Like, you know, there's not too many that I don't like. Aaron. I hate Grant Morrison.
Really? That's the first time I've ever really heard that.
Oh, I hate Grant Morrison with a fiery passion of 1,000 suns. Like I will say this, weirdly enough, two of my favorite, one of my favorite Batman stories of all time was a Grant Morrison story. It was called Arkham Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite Superman stories, the All-Star Superman one, was Grant Morrison. But the way he fucked up the death of Batman, the stupidity of that entire run, his entire fucking Batman Incorporated thing, the way that he decides, I don't really care how characters really act, I'm just going to write them my way because I'm Grant Morrison. He has this like weird Alan Moore envy. And so he tries to be weird like Alan Moore, and it doesn't work because he's not Alan Moore. And Alan, you know, Alan Moore is brilliant, but you know, he had his moment in the sun, and he hasn't really written anything in a while that means anything. Like his run on Swamp Thing was genius. Watchmen was genius. You know, V for Vendetta was, you know, fucking brilliant. It's funny too, because I love Watchmen. I love V for Vendetta. I love, you know, all of Alan Moore's stuff. My absolute favorite thing he's ever done is his run on Swamp Thing, which not a lot of people call that out as their favorite Alan Moore run, but that's what it – I loved Swamp Thing when I was a kid, the Bernie Wrightson stuff, just like Monster of the Week shit. But when Moore took it and was like made him an elemental and a god and connected him to the – I was like, this is some next level shit that I don't understand. I'm too young.
I hope that Del Toro movie actually pans out with Swamp Thing in the elemental, you know, group that he's working on.
I would, as much as the Adrian Barbeau Swamp Thing was great,
forgot about that one.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was funny. I almost bought it. I ended up not doing it because I had to hold it through this whole show. But I almost bought the Swamp Thing TV series.
Oh, shit.
The first season on for $7. And I was like, I can buy that. That's pretty cool. But I didn't want to hold it through for like the next 6 hours. So I didn't. But there's a lot of really great shitbag fucking comic book movies. I saw them all. And
yeah, I think I've seen them all too. And you have to say you can't say you hate something until you experience it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm trying to think, what's the worst comic book movie it depends on what you mean by worst. Like the best worst, where I was having a great time watching it even though it sucked, was David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury.
Seen that, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good time. But anyway, so back to Grant Morrison. I don't like his style. I don't like the way he writes. I haven't read anything of his since All-Star Superman that's made me anything but nauseous. So you know,
let me ask you this question. Are you a DC or a Marvel guy? Which one do you like more?
I like them both for different reasons. Like when I was a kid, Batman's always been my dude. Like when I graduated, you know, when I became, you know, I had 7 or 8 when I needed a much more mature comic book palette. And I graduated from Archie and Peanuts. Batman was the first thing I read. So Batman's always been my guy. And like when times were tough, and I didn't have any money for comic books, and I couldn't buy a lot of books, I always maintained buying Batman every month that it came out. So Batman's always been my guy. When I was a kid, though, outside of Batman, I was much more of a Marvel guy. You know, Spider-Man, Wolverine, the X-Men, Thor. I loved it. And then as I got into my teenage years, and I sort of became extremely pretentious, and I wanted to be Hunter S. Thompson, and I was reading a lot of philosophy and becoming very sort of like, oh, I'm an intellectual or whatever, I really started getting into DC's sort of very epic, very almost Greek mythology godlike thing. The Amazon woman, the ultimate idea of a man, you know, Batman, the Superman inheriting the earth and all that. And I got very much into DC. And then when I hit about, I don't know, 24, 25, I just stopped giving a shit. And I read them for different reasons. I read DC for my larger than life comic book experience. Like, you know, their intergalactic stuff and Green Lantern and all that kind of stuff. And I read Marvel because Marvel is great at, you know, Marvel's always been the best at sort of street level, you know, fuck you kind of comic books. And what's interesting now is that Marvel's really sort of branching into their own sort of intergalactic cast of characters. And I also like that probably my favorite era of comic books or genre or field or whatever you want to call it is in the late 70s, early 80s. And if I'm boring you, please tell me. I'll
definitely
stop.
Definitely.
Oh, this is awesome.
Okay. In the late 70s, early 80s, when everybody was still kind of doing drugs and no one cared about comic books and people were not really paying attention, there was this whole peripheral world that Marvel created. And I started reading that stuff in the mid 80s, you know, finding old issues of it, because this was before trades were all the rage. They didn't do collections. You just had to go to the comic book store and buy the run. But it was like Power Man and Iron Fist, Ghost Rider, Doctor Strange,
yes.
Master of Kung Fu, the vampire was Dracula's son, son of Dracula, Dracula, freaking the other guy, vampire killer. There were all these like Blade, weird peripheral characters. Guardians of the Galaxy were one of them. Silver Surfer, you know, became that. And they were out of the DC, normally DC universe, and they just had their own thing. And that really appealed to me in like the mid 80s. And it's what brought me back to Marvel when I got very heavy handed in DC until later on in the 80s. You know, and so now, like I said, I read them for different things. I read them for different reasons. I don't really collect any one, any more of one than the other. Now, part of that is the fact that Crave is, you know, they want me to review books, so I buy a bunch and they help me pay for a lot of the stuff. So right now, if they were like, you know, you're not writing for Crave anymore, knock wood, it never goes away, but you know, you can only buy the books that you really want to read, I don't really know where I would land. I'd have to think about it. But as of right now, you know, I'm not any more one than the other. I find great value in what they both do. I find great stupidity in what they both do. I find great respect for the characters and what they both do, and I find great disrespect for the characters and what they both do. I don't think the big two are any better or worse than anything else. And the books that they put out, do they attack completely different areas of the world of fantasy. So that's my very long-winded and pretentious and unnecessarily breathy explanation of whether or not I like Marvel or DC better. I probably could have done that in 5 minutes, but that's not my style.
That's okay, man. This is awesome.
No, John Michael, I don't think you've ever answered that question. What about you, sir?
What? Whether I'm a DC or...
I know you read a lot of DC. You read more DC than I do, because I'm an old-school Marvel zombie. I'll just straight up tell you that right now.
That's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
I think that for me, you know, I am an uber Spider-Man fan, period.
Yeah.
But I also appreciate writing. So I think that for me, back in the early 90s is when, what was it, Knight's Quest came out. That's when I was really like uber Batman fan. So I was reading all DC then, and then I started jumping into Marvel. But most recently, I'd have to say that I'm more so of just a good story of, you know, fan. I mean, yeah. Like today I actually read 68 Hallowed Ground, that was put out through Image Comics. It was phenomenal. Really good story, different take on the whole zombie thing, which is being out, you know. How many zombie stories do we have out there now?
I don't think it's overdone yet. Well, never mind. Yeah, it is.
Well,
I can't even say that with a straight face.
The zombie thing. Well, that's a whole other conversation. Finish with your answer.
That's a whole other episode.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm a big fan of what Marvel's doing right now. I'm interested in seeing what they're going to be doing with the whole new wave of things that are going to be happening in the near future here. But I really, really like what DC is doing right now. The whole Crime Syndicate deal with Forever Evil. I really like that.
Let me interrupt you really quick, JM. I was playing Lego Marvel earlier tonight, and I don't mean to call my wife out like this, but I guess I sort of have to. The Spider-Man character was in the game, and she made the comment, which you're not going to like this, man. She said, "I really do not like that character." Yeah, he's always been sort of douchey, and these are her words. So you know where she is.
Well, I know whose pillow I'm gonna fart on when I come down there.
Exactly, but you know, I mean, you can sort of see your point too, but it depends on how he's.
No, I do. In fact, I was actually I have a Marvel Unlimited subscription.
Yeah,
and I was reading Spider-Man, which is the where
yeah.
Is that Spider-Man when he gets the job on Wall Street?
Yeah. And basically, I mean, there were some points in there where I was like, wow, that really is kind of douchey, but I actually like his demeanor. But I'm becoming kind of indifferent about Superior Spider-Man.
It's not over yet?
I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. Like, I when it first happened, I was like, that's lame. Fuck this. Really?
See, it's so funny because I was in the exact opposite spectrum. Like, I loved it when it first happened, and now I'm kind of like, what the fuck, man?
I don't know. I love it. I think that Slott is the way he's doing it is absolute genius, because it's just – it's so – whether you love it or you don't or whatever, it's so goddamn entertaining that it's hard not to – like, I'm all excited for Peter Parker to come back. You know, Peter Parker is Spider-Man. I could not have Doc Ock be Spider-Man forever. But until he gets back, I'm super enjoying it. And when it first happened, I was like, that's lame. I still think it was bullshit that they stopped making it Amazing Spider-Man and put it to Superior Spider-Man. But that's sort of been a thing I have a problem with comic books anyway, is that it used to be like, you know, they started a book and they let a book run. You know, that's why Batman's up to like issue 900 or 700, 650 or whatever it is. Right. And now they do a run of like 15, and then they change it and they reboot it and they call it, you know, Daredevil Plus or Wolverine End. And you're like, yeah, that sucks. So, you know, I didn't really think they needed to change to Superior Spider-Man, but I'm super enjoying the story. I'm super enjoying what a fucking asshole Doc Ock is. I love the way Dan Slott writes.
Have you read any of the team-ups and the specials?
I haven't read any. I read the most recent, the like Superior Spider-Man. I think it was Superior Team Up. I liked Marvel Team Up as a kid, and I liked the Avenging Spider-Man title they had for like 8 seconds.
Oh man, I love that. That was probably one of my favorite ones.
I think Zeb Wells is another fabulous comic book writer. I think he does some really remarkable stuff. But anyway, I haven't really read – I don't really read the offshoots of Superior Spider-Man because I'm not a big offshoots guy. Like I read Batman, and I used to read Batman and Detective, but I don't – you know, I read it – well, I can't even say that I don't. If the way I do things for Crave and reviewing for Crave, I read all the Batman books. Right. But if someone was to take that away, I would read Batman and possibly Detective, but probably not, because I don't really care about Batman and Robin. I don't really care about Detective. I don't really care about Nightwing. I mean, as characters, when I was a kid, I really liked Nightwing, but now I just don't care. Talon, I continue to read because I find that his character to be fascinating.
He is. But, he is. And the whole Gotham Butcher deal, that guy's badass.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing is like, whenever anything's new and sort of brings a new angle to it, you know, I get excited by those new characters. There's a lot of independent stuff that I really like. You know, the new ever since Kevin Eastman decided to sort of reclaim the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and make them more – they're not as violent and dark as the first one of the series, but they are dark. And this new series is funny and well-written and much more adult-themed. I have them
on my to-read list because my buddy was telling me about how Leonardo had been brainwashed. So
yeah, Leonardo's been brainwashed. He's working for the Foot Clan but it's not just like you're brainwashed and now we've rescued you. Like there's a whole lot of weird psychological shit going on. And Shredder, interestingly enough, Splinter. The Rat, or their dad or whatever, is a way more interesting, complex, layered, and sort of unbalanced character. He doesn't always go like, oh, yes, I have seen the way through calm and serenity. He gets wicked pissed through the whole thing. That's awesome. Really good. I like a lot of some of the Vertigo stuff that's going on. I'm trying to think of – like I really liked Velvet, which I think is Image. I love Vampire – American Vampire, which is funny because I don't really like vampires. I'm trying to think what else. There's some other stuff going on in the independent thing, and my brain is giving me a brain fart right now. But you know, I really like that stuff. It's anything that has to do with character and development. So Talon is something interesting that continues to be interesting. Nightwing is Nightwing, and I don't really. If I'm reading Batman, I don't need to read Nightwing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. I mean, I highly recommend trying to read some of the other Superior Spider-Man branches on two other writers, because it's pretty neat to see the take from another writer. You know, because Dan Slott's been doing it for, what, almost 200, I don't know.
Let's see, what are they up to? Well, I mean, I don't remember. They ended Amazing with 700.
700. Now they're on 20.
So at seven, so it's, I know he started, his run started with Big Time. I don't remember when.
Which is like 592 or maybe 554.
Yeah, so he's been doing it for almost 200 issues. That's crazy. Yeah.
Have you read any of the Scarlet Spider comics?
Nah, I was never a big, okay. Spider-Man and I have had a very rocky relationship. When I was a kid and I read it.
Like The Thing?
What?
Like The Thing?
Aha!
Another bad joke. Marvel joke.
There you go. Spider-Man, when the Clone Saga happened, I hated it and I stopped reading. And then when the Spider Lineage thing happened, I hated it and stopped reading. And then when Brand New Day happened, I hated it and stopped reading. So anything having to do with the clone thing, I just don't. I have no interest in. Just like I have no interest in outside of Venom, I have no interest in any of the other symbiote stuff. It just doesn't interest me. So I haven't read Scarlet Spider. My editor did and liked it enough to be bummed out that it's ending.
Yeah, that's right. It is ending. So was the Mark Waid Daredevil run, too.
Yeah, well, I'm bummed about that because I thought Mark – I mean, I loved the depressing Daredevil stuff. I thought that – I mean, Matt Fraction – I think it was Matt – it was either Matt Fraction or Andy Diggle shit the bed really bad with the whole – the end of what was it called? Shadowlands. Like, he just fucked that up entirely. Yeah. But I like Waid's brighter approach. I'm a big Mark Waid fan. I mean, the guy's an old school comic book writer. He knows how to tell a story. I'm a fan of his, and I love his run on Daredevil. I'm hoping that the guy that picks it up doesn't suck. You were saying that you. The last thing I remember was you were saying that the only reason you said that you because it was in Houston and then you were talking about Venom was canceled.
Yeah, Venom is canceled.
I didn't know when did that happen? I haven't heard that yet.
It's going to be ending within the next couple of issues.
Yeah, I know that Scarlet Spider. I don't know about Venom, but I know Scarlet Spider is going to some team book.
Yeah, he's going to New Warriors.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
he's going to be teaming up with Nova. The other guys.
Yeah, my editor, Andy, was a big fan of the Scarlet Spider run. He was bummed that it was – and Venom, too.
Yeah.
He was bummed that it was –
Well, I mean, if you like Superior Spider-Man and you like the whole, he doesn't hold back when he's fighting.
Yeah.
Scarlet Spider, he'll fucking kill you. he actually – I think it was when Kraven the Hunter – correct me if I'm wrong. Spider-Man was killed, and he chose life and not the spider. And he was resurrected as Peter Parker. Well, when Kane was killed, he chose the spider. So when he gets pissed, like when you push him to the limits, because he's always trying to be the hero. When you push him to the limits, he says this key word. He goes, "Pray," and then he like fucking shoots out these giant knives out from under his wrists, and he just slaughters people.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I did not read it because I had some like I knew it wasn't gonna be good or it wasn't well written or I didn't like the writer or the artist or anything.
Yeah.
I just didn't do it because I have long been a non fan of the whole clone saga. That doesn't mean I'm right. It doesn't mean that there's not like I probably will because you've said it's good. I got one other friend who said it's good, and then my editor said it's good. Like usually if three people say that something's good who as opinion I either respect or at least figure is worthwhile, I'll check it out. Like, I don't want to read Hawkeye because Matt Fraction just he fucked up. Like Fear itself could have been so great and he fucked it up so bad that I was like, I have no interest in dealing with this at all. And three, like Andy, my editor, my friend Jamie, who's a fine artist here in Cincinnati, and one other. Oh, this girl Sarah, who's a teammate of my of my fiance, who's incredibly smart and just sort of getting into comic books, they all three were like, it's great. You should read it. And I was like, all right, since you all said it was, I'll read it. And they're right. It's absolutely phenomenal. So
yeah, my fiance actually loves it.
Yeah, it's one of the best comic books on the stands right now. I mean, it's fucking insane.
Does your fiance read comics a lot?
Yeah, her.
Okay.
Don't make fun of her.
No.
But,
of course not.
Her two favorite superheroes. You know, everybody's got their favorites. For Marvel, it's Hawkeye, and for DC, it's The Flash.
Oh, that's interesting. I've only met one other person whose favorite hero in DC is The Flash. This kid, young kid.
I thought you were going to say Hawkeye and Green Arrow. I'm like, oh, I can see a connection there.
Yeah. No, this kid was a young kid, worked at a comic book store in New Hampshire that I would go to every now and then. Flash was his favorite, and I'm like, I always liked Flash's Rogues Gallery. I always liked the rogues and the fact that it's sort of like bad guys with an honor code, more so than I really cared about Flash. Though I always thought Wally West was a great Flash because he was just kind of funny. But you know, Barry Allen, you know, he's the man right now. I haven't read the new 52 Flash. I really liked Flash when I was a kid. I have a lot of the older comics right up until the whole run ended. I thought the Rebirth was good. I liked Kid Flash. When the new 52 started, they kind of lost me, so I haven't read it in a while.
I have not read the Flash new 52 either.
Yeah, I've had to purchase them and hunt them down for her because she likes them so much.
Oh, wow.
She likes it. I think it's because of
– It's a good gateway drug.
Yeah. Well, she's psychology and behavioral health student and major, whatever, she got her degree in it. So something about his intellect maybe be stimulating. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. My fiance is not a comic book reader. Like, she loves the fact that I like them, and she likes to talk to me about them because she likes to listen to what I have to say about them. And she goes to me to comic book movies and stuff. But she tried to read them, and she's like, "Yeah, this doesn't interest me," and which is cool because roller derby doesn't interest me. Like a bunch of people roller skating in a circle and knocking each other down. You know, I was like, you guys should guar it up. I mean, that's
tough. Start spraying people with cuttlefishes.
Yeah, I've had people explain the rules to me because they do it at Comic Palooza every year, and I still don't understand it.
Yeah, me neither. I've been dating a girl who's on the Cincinnati Roller Girls for 2.5 years, and I kind of get it. I also don't care. Which makes it hard for me to, and I'm super on it because it's not like I'm saying like, well, you have to sit here and read all these comic books and you have to listen to all this metal. Like whenever I go to shows, I'm like, do you want to go? And she's like, is it one of those bands? Yeah, I want to go.
So, I get the same thing here.
Yeah. She's not a big, she loves old punk and she loves old R&B and soul. So we get along on that. And she likes the whole comic book thing, like as far as like the movies go and stuff like that. But she has no real interest in reading them. And I can't really get too angry at her because, you know, I go to her derby games to cheer her on and go, go, honey, you're the best. And then she'll ask me questions about the game afterwards. I'm like, I have no idea.
I was there, but I wasn't really paying attention.
Like, I watched you play. I made sure that I always saw when you played and I could tell you what I thought. But as far as the sport goes overall, I don't care.
So I wanted to ask you both of you guys this question. Have you guys been watching any of the recent comic book TV shows that are out there?
Oh, my God, yeah.
I watched the first two episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then between school and writing deadlines and my dogs and my family and all the crap that's been going on, I have not – they're TiVo'd, but I have not – or DVR'd, but I have not had a chance to actually watch them. I liked the first season of Arrow. Again, I haven't had a chance to watch the second season of Arrow.
So. What did you think of the first couple episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. that you did see?
I loved the first episode, didn't care about the second one at all. The biggest problem that I have with it, and I've seen two episodes, so I hear it gets better.
It actually does get better.
Okay, yeah. There's certain things that what's his name brings – what's his name? I can't remember. The guy that did Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon. There's certain things that Joss Whedon brings to everything that he does that work on some level and don't work on others. And in this, the sort of like rapid fire dialogue gets a little hard to stand. And like the I have a problem with the incredibly hot anything. And so the incredibly hot hacker doesn't, you know, like I know a lot of guys and girls that are hackers. They're not hot. It's just like the incredibly hot CSI person. I'm like, yeah, no.
You gotta, so, let me interrupt you real quick. You gotta understand the person that I live with, my wife, is a huge Joss Whedon nerd fangirl. She has a Buffy the Vampire tattoo on her back. So
wow, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I got into because I was sleeping with a girl who loved it, and I was like, yeah, I'll watch it, I guess. And
yeah, me too.
and the first season, I was like, this is garbage, but I was still sleeping with her. By the end of the second season, I was hooked. And I was a huge fan of Firefly. I thought Firefly was I thought Firefly was the joint. I was so bummed that it – and I think that Joss Whedon to date has made, outside of The Dark Knight and the original Superman, the best superhero film that's been made thus far. So I got a lot of – but he also has certain things that he does. So the second episode of The Shield was just like – too much of her being like the kooky smartass and like the hard guy who was trying not to show that he liked her. And I was like, eh, I don't care about that. But from what I've heard, they really worked that out and they worked the bugs out over the first few episodes and it got a lot better. So I definitely have to sit down and watch them.
What I think the main problem is, you know, you have all these new characters being thrown at you and there's you don't know who they are yet and they don't have time to, you know, actually make these people believable and – you know, but as episodes go on, you start to know these characters a little bit more. It's like trying to do the Avengers, but if you don't know who the Avengers are.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, you know, because when I saw the second episode, I was like, that's kind of crappy. And my fiance was like, are you going to stop watching? I was like, oh, no, not by a long shot, because there's no way that you're going to really know if it's any. Like, I give everything. There's a lot of this is based off of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I give everything one season.
Right.
By the end of the first season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I was like, this is fucking bullshit. They paid somebody to write this. And by the end of the second season, I was like, I'm hooked. So I always give something the one full season, and then, you know, I start watching the second season. Like Arrow. Arrow got off to a really rocky start, but I liked what it did. And And this is something, you know, and it you know, people are like, oh, Ian, that kind of makes you kind of a girl. But I was a big, big Smallville fan.
No, okay. I like the way the CW is doing this whole Green Arrow approach.
Yeah, I haven't – what are the other – I mean, I saw the pilot for the god-awful Wonder Woman show that never got picked up. That was fucking horrible.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen that.
Oh,
I don't know if I want to.
If you go to Pirate Bay, you can download it. Or if you go to any comic book convention, somebody will have it. It's absolutely miserable. It's so bad that you'll be so glad that someone said, no, we're not going to make this.
Oh, good.
Well, the whole second season of Arrow is actually pretty fucking good.
Yeah, I'm still like, I think, you know, John Michael, we're working through season one because it just came out on Netflix. So yeah. we're like episode 6 in the first season, so we're looking forward to – we're just finding the time, like you said, Ian. You know, I'm working, I'm back in school like you, and it's just finding time to get shit done and just relax and watch TV.
What's cool about it is that, you know, like at the last episode of season 1, it hits this level of like, holy shit, how are they going to top that? They never come down from that when it gets into season 2.
Yeah, my friend who's a hard ass about those kind of things is digging it. He made fun of me for watching Smallville, and towards the end of Smallville, I can understand. But so for him to be into something like that makes me want to check it out for sure. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's like anything else, man. Life gets in the way. Like the other thing is, you know, with Crave, like any other, you know, like any other thing that you do for money like this, you get paid by – I get paid by the amount I write. So if I have any free time, I tend not to watch television. I sit down and write. And if I'm not – like I'm in the middle of Scott's trying to like help me sort of get me in the door to try to maybe hopefully write comic books one day. Or at least like guest – or just like do one. If I do one, I'll be fine. Like I don't need to do a whole run of Batman. If someone was like, we want you to do one issue, an offshoot of Batman, a Batman annual, I would do it and then run into the street and get hit by a car because I wouldn't need anything else. And So I'm in the middle of like writing this. It started off as a 4-issue miniseries, and then Scott read it and really liked it, gave me some notes. Then from his notes, I sort of blew the whole thing up, and now it's just like 200-page graphic novel I'm writing based on Batman and all his that Batman universe, and I'm like 60 pages into it. So if I sit down and I don't have anything to write for Crave, and I don't have any schoolwork to do, and Miranda, that's my fiance, isn't home because she's a chef, so sometimes she's doing like catering stuff. So if I none of that's happening, then it's the only time I have to write for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I don't find myself watching that much television.
Yeah. Do you ever listen to other podcasts?
I've listened to a couple. I sound like an asshole because I want everybody to listen to mine, but it's got nothing to do with not wanting to. I never, ever have the time.
Yes. Yeah, the time I find the most time I find to actually listen to podcasts is when I'm driving in the car.
And that's the thing is like I need to get some kind of something that I can listen to it in the car because that would help me.
Yeah, I highly suggest listening to Fat Man on Batman.
I agree on that one
with Kevin Smith because he actually has Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo on. They have solo episodes and then they have one together, which is cool.
It was funny because Scott knows that I watch Comic Book Men religiously, and he sent me this text and he was like, there's a surprise coming. And I was like, okay. And he wouldn't tell me what it was. Like, all right. He didn't say anything about Comic Book Man. He just said there's a surprise coming. So I'm like, okay. So I'm sitting there watching Comic Book Man, and they come back from commercial, and it's Scott on the radio podcast of the show. It's really funny because I can't stand Kevin Smith's movies at all, and I really don't like any of his comic book stuff. I didn't like his Batman run. I hated his Daredevil run. I just don't care. But I like him. And I want to hang out
with
him, and I want to hang out with everybody in that comic book store, and I love the show and watch it religiously. And so it's just like I bought a sweatshirt. That's how much I love it. Like I walk around with a Jay and Silent Bob Secret Stash sweatshirt that says staff on the back, and everybody's like, "You're a dork." I'm like, "I don't give a fuck." That shirt. So it just So I would definitely listen to a Kevin Smith podcast. I really liked the evening with Kevin Smith stuff too. So.
Yeah, he does a couple of other podcasts that I listen to, and I found myself listening to those more than anything other than my iPod.
Right.
But he's hilarious.
Thanks to me, of course.
Yeah.
Give credit.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank
you. Give credit now.
Come on. Yeah, this one he does, Hollywood Babylon. If you like the whole ragging on people and hating on people as far as what fucking bullshit they do in the media or Kim Kardashian hate or whatever.
Porn star Kim Kardashian.
Yeah. Oh man. Ralph Garman is all over it and it's fucking hilarious.
And he's a really nice guy. When I went and saw that show live in LA when I was there a few months ago, and Kevin Smith didn't come out after the show and talk to those fans, but he did. Ralph Garman did.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, I like Kevin Smith. I mean, I don't know if you guys watch Comic Book Men.
I do.
Yeah, I'm more when I hang out with Brian than any of them. But I like the whole vibe of the show, and I like him. It's just really funny because I don't like any of his movies. There's not
really.
And Clerks was kind of okay. I did like Clerks better when I saw the real ending.
Where he gets no spoilers, but when he gets shot.
Yeah, when he gets shot, like that made it the whole thing make a lot more sense and seem a lot more sort of. But I thought Clerks was okay, and I didn't like Mallrats. I didn't like Chasing Amy. I didn't like the stupid movie where with the devil and the angel. I hated that actually.
Okay, this is the part where we'll just agree to disagree.
You love all his movies?
I do, actually. I'm a huge nerd. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan, and I love that he's doing the all the podcasting stuff because I've been doing it since 2005, and he stole it from me, but not really.
Yeah,
you gotta say about Brian from the show. He owns like one metal shirt. He always wears that Charred Walls of the Damned shirt.
Yeah, Yeah, that's true. And I think they're probably like his buddies, or they sent it to him for
something,
free.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he actually even listens to metal. I think he just was like, okay, I'll wear the shirt on air. Good for you. right. Yeah, I don't know. I really tried to like Kevin Smith's movies, and it just never happened. But I like him. It's not like you know, there's a lot of people there that make stuff that I don't like, and I don't like them either. But I like him. Yeah. I'd like to hang out with him.
Yeah, exactly. He's working on a new movie right now called Tusk. Have you heard about this?
No. And I've also not seen Red River or
– Oh, Red State?
Red State, which everyone tells me, even if you don't like Kevin Smith, I really like that.
Yeah, I would agree on that one. And if you're not a Kevin Smith fan, it's a totally different style of movie that he's used to doing, but – there's a couple different styles in the movie. It sort of changes halfway, but
I heard him talking about that the new horror movie he's doing.
Yeah, it's a horror movie. It's about a guy who kidnaps a kid or somebody, like a writer or something, was writing a story about this guy, and it's sort of like he dresses him. He's trying to convert him into a walrus, a human walrus.
Really?
it sounds really stupid, but
well, dude, after seeing the human centipede thing.
The only thing I've seen about that is the South Park spoof they did.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, no, I watched it. Well, I'm not gonna lie. I watched half of it and was like, yeah, I don't really care about this at all.
I met one of the first couple years of Comic Palooza. The whole three or four guys, whoever were the human centipedes, were at the convention, and it was so sad just to walk by. Nobody was going to get their autographs. Nobody was talking to them. And you just feel sad for them.
Well, yeah, that always happens to me. Like when I went to the New York Comic Con, speaking of the whole wrestling thing, Virgil, like the assistant of the Million Dollar Man.
Yeah.
Because they had a bunch of wrestling guys there, and like the King, not Harley Race, but
Jerry Lawler
was there. I didn't see him. He was down through another area, but there was like a line around the block to get his autograph. People were lining up to get Sergeant Slaughter's autograph and like the one other wrestling guy that was there. And then there was like him, and he was just standing there and like with his 8x10 glossies, and nobody was coming.
He actually was, I saw somewhere he was actually like panhandling in the fucking subways.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, nothing fucks you up faster than wrestling. You know, like for every, you know, Rock or Stone Cold or John Cena or Hulk Hogan, there's like 50 guys who are, you know, working shit jobs or addicted to drugs or dead or hate their life or whatever. It's like, I don't understand why anybody, I mean, I love that they do because it's entertaining for me, but I can't understand why anybody would want to be in that industry.
Now that I'm an adult, yeah, I'm glad I didn't go that route.
I would love to write for him, but yeah. I mean, I couldn't see.
Like Barry, he's 54, and
hey, way to call him out, man.
he actually doesn't look any different. He looks exactly the same as he did when he was on TV, which is fucking awesome. He's very, very healthy, and but I also see like his aches and pains, you know, like when he's trying to get up, I can see the things that are hurting him. And he put his body through hell.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and there's all those guys too, you know, and that's why even like the independent, like there's a guy in the independent circuit right now named AR Fox, and he wrestles for Evolve, and he's staggering to watch. But when he's older, he's going to have, his bones are going to be dust.
Yeah.
You know, he's just going to, like, if this strong wind will just blow his body away, because he's got – the things that he does are insane. And it's all, you know, predicated on Vince's whim. Like, they had one of – Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan hasn't had a bad match since he popped out of the fucking
room. Oh, my God. He is one of the best, man.
And they have completely shit-canned him. Like, fucking Vince McMahon – took the momentum. He had momentum to spare and fucked it up. And I knew they were going to do this because when CM Punk became the champion, the heavyweight champion, Triple H did the same thing to him in another kind of way. Like this is a few years ago. And it took CM Punk a long time to get back to where he is now. Problem is, Daniel Bryan, as good as he is in the ring, he does not have the same charisma or
Mike skills.
Or Mike skills that Punk does. So when like now he's been regulated to like this weird sort of him and the Punk are having some beef with the Wyatts, like biggest like those. I love that they're like, hey, everybody really liked the Shield, so let's bring in a redneck Shield. I'm like, okay. But anyway, the Daniel Bryan thing, like he's a fantastic wrestler and a great like personality, and Vince fucked him, and CM Punk keeps getting snipped from the brass ring of like being the main event guy, even though he carried the title for over a year. Like, and this is all Vince doing. So I can't imagine dedicating your life to that and having this fucking weirdo, sick in the head old man decide your fate. Like, that would just be weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's, it sucks because you see these guys busting their fucking asses, and then I don't know where Shawn Michaels comes up and totally takes all the wind right out of your sails.
Well, that's the other thing, is that I don't know when this happened or how this happened or what happened with it, but at some point the WWF, WWE, whatever they are, lost the ability to push the new guys. Like, and so now they rely way too much on people that have been there way too long.
Yeah,
like, I mean, Kane, in fact, you know, one of the main events for WrestleMania 30 is going to be Triple H versus somebody is annoying. Triple H, it's over. It's done. You had your run. You were the fucking man, and now it's over. Same thing with Shawn Michaels. The Undertaker thing's a little different because it's sort of like
he's not even on TV anymore.
Yeah, he's just like, I come out at WrestleMania and someone tries to beat the streak, and you're like, okay, that's fun. But you know, like CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, you know, there's a couple of
Zach Ryder.
No, not Zach Ryder. Dirk Diggler. That's the guy from the movie. Ziggler.
Yeah, Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler. I'm trying to think. Sami Zayn, who used to be the guy that one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, El Generico, who's now in NXT. Like, there are all these dudes that should be being pushed and being made to be, you know, excellent, and instead they're sort of being regulated to play second tier to guys who had long since should have been gone away. Yeah, and that's too bad. But
I actually like one of the guys on there is Tyson Kidd. I really like his skill.
Tyson Kidd's great. He Punk was pushing for him, and he hurt himself. You know, one of the biggest weights on there is I forget what his name is on the show, but on the WWE, but he used to be Antonio Castellani. Now he's part of the American team with the Real Americans.
He's
big bald guy. I forget what they call him on the show now. He used to be he was in Ring of Honor. He was in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. He was in a bunch of independent stuff, and he's amazing. That guy should be running the place. Same thing. One of the best examples ever, Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose is a fucking wrestler, great mic skills, whatever. And now they've fucking regulated him to be part of the Shield, and they fucked the Shield up. The Shield came in with huge momentum, and they fucked it up.
Yeah.
You know what we need to do here? We need to give both of you guys like your own podcast on the Metal Geeks Network here, just to geek out on this stuff. Because, I mean, we got room for it. If you guys want to get together and do an episode, man.
Sure, man. I would. I mean, there's nothing I would like more than to spend time talking about wrestling. I mean,
fuck yeah, man.
I'm lost with it. So, I hate to say it, but so JM, I just read some news. Comic Palooza 2014. Guess who they just announced as a guest? Greg Capullo.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, and they announced Roy Thomas as well, which is that's pretty cool. Awesome.
Wow, man!
Bring your Black Label Society shirt. They'll love you.
Right? He can have all my Black Label Society CDs. I'm over.
Yeah, I don't like that band. So when he started talking to me about them, I was like, yeah, man, cool. I'm glad you like them. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Like, I don't have any beef with them. I don't think they're bad. I just don't care.
Yeah,
I think I was over them last time I saw them live. It was like maybe Ozfest years ago or something, and he was just guitar doodling for no reason, just for like 8 minutes at a time, and you had like a 20-minute set. You know, it's like, dude, come on, you could be playing songs and not just fucking doodling on your guitar.
Yeah, I don't know. I just – when I first heard them, I was like, great, they're a bar rock band. I don't care that Zakk Wylde is – you know. And also, I remember Zakk Wylde when he was like the skinny kid from Jersey. So when he became like the Southern Hulk, I was like, okay. And so I just I just kind of got turned off by – and plus, I'm just not, you know, like – I don't care. Like, I don't care at all.
He sounds – he's trying too much to sound like a Southern Aussie.
Yeah, and it just – it doesn't work. And what happens is instead of his stuff being interesting, it's shtick. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have any place in my life for shtick. I mean, outside of like, you know, black metal, which I find amusing. I don't really – I don't like it, like the whole thing, beer drinking, Sons of Anarchy gang, you know, we're bikers and we drink and we play guitar and play rock. And I just, I'm like, yeah, you guys might as well be wrestlers. Like, I just don't care. So that's why I'm so standing with Greg Capullo. Greg Capullo's like, yeah, man, BLS are one of the greatest bands ever. And I just, I'm standing there going, that's just not true. But I don't want to say that to you because you're a really nice guy. So.
Cool. Well, I think we're going to wrap up this episode for tonight.
Gee, why? It's only, what, like 4 hours?
We can go longer, but...
No, that's all right. I got to get up to go to school.
Yeah. Dude, thanks so much for coming on to this episode.
Thanks for having me and letting me ramble on, you know. Anytime you want me to be on, I'm more than happy to be on.
Yeah, anytime, I mean, anytime something big comes up, we're going to definitely have you on as a guest.
Cool. Yeah. Anytime, like I said, you know, I'm always around. I like the show, and I'm psyched to be a part of it. So if you guys want me to come back on, we didn't really talk that much about music. Just let me know.
So let the listeners know where they can get a hold of you and where to find you on the interwebs.
Crave Online, CRAVEONLINE.com. That's where I do all my writing. You can also – I occasionally do stuff for Hustler Magazine. So if you actually look through Hustler Magazine for the articles, you might find me there.
The articles?
I do articles. I've done a couple for – I did one on Agnostic Front and a couple other bands for them. They're kind of dicks, so I don't do that much for them. But anyway, Crave Online, or you can find me, Ian Robinson. You just look up Ian Robinson on my Facebook page. And you can find me there. There's also Ian Robinson's Writing, which is my writing page, where if you don't really care about my life but you want to read what I write, you can do that. And I'm also on Twitter, whatever it is,
@
Ian Robinson. So,
and Instagram as well now, too.
Oh, yeah, and Instagram at KidRobot71. So if you Instagram all the social media shit that I swore I would never link into, I'm fucking full on in it.
Right.
So you can find me... on any of those. I don't care if you don't agree with me on something. I ask that if you disagreeing with me or asking my opinion or getting into it with me about something is fine. If you come on and you just decide to start shit with me, like you're not a metal or you're a poser or whatever, I'm just going to ignore you, so don't waste your time. Other than that, anybody, you know, I don't really ever refuse friend requests. I don't really refuse when people tweet me. I try to tweet them back because I know how much it sucks to tweet somebody and you never hear back from them. You kind of go, you're a dick. And so I work really hard to make sure that doesn't happen. So
you just reminded me of something. I got to give a shout out to a listener. There's a little guy. I don't know how old he is, but I'm going to guess he's 15. He has some problems in the hospital and everything, and he's a listener. He always tweets me. Tyler Powers, his birthday is coming up this Friday, so I want to give him a shout out. Happy birthday, man.
Happy birthday, man. And best of luck with whatever's going on.
Yeah. So on that note, JM, you can find us everywhere. First of all, find us on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, give a review, because we like that. We want more people to know about the show, and that's the only way to make it grow. Just by touching it makes it grow a little bit too, but
yeah. Just use your thumb and stroke it.
There you go.
You can find us at Metal Geeks on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram @ The Metal Geeks Podcast, and you can find us on Facebook. All that other shit. You know, basically, all you got to do is just find us on Twitter, and you literally be linked up to everything. It's
right.
Not that hard.
And you can look for us on altness.com as well as rhymeswithgeek.com, which is a great, it's a new comic book podcast, you know, conglomerate, if you want to call it that. It's a bunch of really cool comic, you know, related shows, comic book related shows that are all together.
Cool. Yeah, I'm actually going to be I'm in works to start reviewing comics with them, so be on the lookout for that.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on the show, man.
I can't thank you guys enough for having me, and I look forward to doing it again.
Definitely, man. And as we say to all of our guests, keep it metal and keep it geeky.
I have no problem with either. So, awesome. Awesome.
Thank you, man.
Later, man. Bye.
Later.
Geekazoids! Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit MSRcast.com. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.